is Radio Shalom coming to you through Planet 104.6 FM. Well, we're fortunate to have in the studio this morning again Jules, and Jules is going to talk to us about a very relevant subject.
Assimilation.
See what comes out of it.
Good morning, everybody. And before I start, let me say thanks to you, Joan, for being here, and to put on record how impressed I am that Joan has been doing this for more than 30 years. I think that is absolutely wonderful. And if we were in a TV studio with 200 people, they'd all be jumping up and down and applauding. So just picture everybody jumping up and down and applauding. Well
done. That means they must all be Meshuggah.
Well, we all Meshuggah.
So, Jules, you're going to talk about a very subject that touches us all, I think.
And has done for thousands of years. Mm-hmm. However, before we talk about serious stuff, and it is serious stuff, nothing can happen before we laugh.
He goes with his vitsen. Okay.
Well, you can't start anything. You can't start something serious unless you open up the passages to the mind and the brain and you get yourself going, the oxygen pumping and endorphins are released. And the only way you can do that is by telling a story. So here's the story on assimilation. The young man living in Poland emigrates to America. And after he's been there for a year, he goes back to Poland to visit his family. And he walks into the house and his mother sees him and she says, "Moshe, what happened to your beard and your payas?" So he says, "Mama," he says, "I live in America now and nobody has a beard and side curls." She says, "Oy vey," she says, "but you are keeping kosher, aren't you?" He says, "No, Mama," he says, "this is America, you know, we go out, we eat out with friends, nobody keeps kosher, not even at home, no, we can't, we have takeouts, we can't keep kosher." "Well, I assume that you've got a Jewish girlfriend." "Mama, this is America, I'm living in America now, and, you know, you can't do that." "So, you know, I don't have a girlfriend right now, but everybody's got a girlfriend." "You still keep Shabbos?" "Mama, in America, everybody works on Shabbos." "So, no, I'm afraid I don't keep Shabbos," she says. "Well, at least I can be certain that you still have a bris." Still circumcised. What is assimilation? What do you think assimilation? Give me a one-sentence definition of assimilation.
Giving away your Jewish identity.
Giving away your Jewish identity, good. But assimilation can be any nation, not just Jewish. So assimilation.
But we're talking now.
We are. So giving away your identity. What is your identity? It is your culture and your religion. So assimilation is when you change your culture to another culture, or your religion to another religion, or both. And the assimilation is you change it to the culture or the religion of the place where you're living. And we have been living in many places. As you said to me the other day, we're always immigrants, always, in all the countries, including New Zealand, which is as far away from everybody else as our sun is from the Milky Way. Little star, big Milky Way, little New Zealand. However, New Zealand, can I say it, is probably the best country in the world.
Absolutely, I believe that.
Firstly, before we discuss the effects of assimilation on Judaism, let's discuss the numbers. How many Jews have we got in the world now?
No idea.
15 million. 2,000 years ago, which is the earliest time that I could find numbers. There were numbers at the time of the Bible, but statistics. They've calculated for 2,000 years ago. 2,000 years ago, there were 4.2 million Jews. 4.2. The world population at that time was 300 million. Now, being an accountant, a numbers man, if I take the growth of world population 2,000 years ago from 300 million to 7 billion now, that is a growth rate of 0.17% per annum. Some years more, some years less, but as a...
Is that worldwide?
Worldwide. 0.17% per year. Now, if I apply that 0.17% to the 4.2 million Jews who were living at the time of the Roman dispersion, the destruction of the Second Temple, then surprisingly, there would be 105 million Jews today. 105 million. Same growth rate as the rest of the world. So we've got to ask ourselves why. Why there's only 15 million when it should be, by the statistical averages of world population, it should be 105 million. The reasons are twofold. Number one is murder. And there have been so many murders. I've just used the one word murder. So some of the worst one was the Holocaust. 6 million murdered. But there have been many before that in time of the Crusades.
Pogroms. Crusades.
Yeah. Throughout history, the conquest by the Romans, destruction of the temple in 70 AD, they estimate that there were 100,000 Jews were killed. The Greeks killed a lot. Not the Greeks, but the Seleucids. The Seleucids killed a lot. Babylonians killed a lot. So the land was conquered. People were killed. People fled. People were dispersed. So we have the diaspora. Most of the Jews today live in the diaspora. The Jewish population in Israel is 6.5 million. In America, it's 6 million. The rest of the world is the rest. France, I think, is number three with 500,000. So, yeah, we are all over the world. And the reasons for the low numbers are assimilation and murder. We also need to ask ourselves, what is a Jew? Which is a big subject, but I'll tell you this. If you go with a Jew is somebody whose mother was Jewish, that's a start. It doesn't matter what you do after that. If your mother was Jewish, you're Jewish. And the proof of it is this. We spoke about assimilation and about losing interest. If you ask people in America, are you Jewish? Most of them will say yes. For instance, the actor Seth Rogen is Jewish. So they asked him, are you Jewish? He said, yes. How come you're Jewish? My mother's Jewish. Do you do anything Jewish? No. Do you go to shul on Friday or Saturday, Shabbos? No. Do you keep kosher at home? No. Do you go to shul on the holidays? No. So how can you say you're Jewish? Well, I'm Jewish. I was born Jewish. So he doesn't hide the fact that he's Jewish, but he doesn't do anything Jewish. So in the 6 million, and you know, there are varying numbers. Some statisticians say it's 5.7 million. Some say it's 6.8. It's a million difference. Why? Because of this, that people, they don't deny that they're Jewish, but they don't own up to it either. Now, let's go through some of the periods so we get a little understanding of assimilation. Throughout the periods where Jews were free and they were well treated, they assimilated. Throughout the periods where there was persecution and oppression and murder, they didn't assimilate. Why?
They didn't have the choice.
Didn't have the choice. My father asked him once, because I discussed this with him, and he was an atheist. Why was he an atheist? After the Second World War, he said, well, where was God when 6 million people, Jews, were murdered and many, many more in the war? So I said to him, well, you're an atheist and you're Jewish and there's been a lot of persecution. Well, why don't you change your religion? And he said to me, they won't let me. They won't let me. So when there's persecution, when there's oppression, you can't say, well, don't oppress me because I want to change my religion. They don't care. In times of pogroms, they don't care. So assimilation, the first reason is when there's freedom, when there's rights, when there's equal rights, then you take on the ways of the land and you assimilate. The best example is Alexander the Great was 300 BC, there about 350 BC. He was a great king, great ruler, great emperor. And when he conquered Judea, he came to the priest and he bowed to him. And everybody said, how can you bow to the priest? You are the emperor. And he said, well, I had a dream, and my dream was that a person like this priest gave me a sign that I would conquer the world. And I did. And this is the person that was in my dreams. And after that, he treated the Jews with great respect. He had great respect for all the lands that he conquered, but more so for the Jews for this reason. And including, they never had to pay taxes. Freedom. A lot of people assimilated. A lot of people took on the ways of Alexander the Great. Even today, there are a lot of Jewish men who are called Alex. And it's from that time. Alex, Alexander. After him was the Seleucid Empire. And the Seleucid Empire, there was a lot of fighting.
Weren't they barbarians?
They were barbaric. They were. Alexander the Great wasn't. But the Seleucids, I think, were barbaric. And they conquered Judea. And from there, we have the Maccabees. The Maccabees revolted against them. And some say, and I agree with it, that if not for the Maccabees, we'd probably have no Jews today. They revolted, and they ruled the land for quite a long time and preserved Judaism.
So until they fell out.
Until they fell out. They were conquered, sure. Now, the Seleucids, because they were oppressive, the Jews remained Jews. But from Alexander's time, there was a group called the Hellenists. The Hellenists, and one family in particular called Tobiad, they said, we must abandon Judaism and we must take on the way of the land. We must become Greeks. We must be. They were the Hellenists. And there was horrible fighting between the Hellenists and the Orthodox Jews. They were actually, they had battles. So here's one group that says we must assimilate, and the other group says no ways. Now, how did the Hellenists come about? Because there was freedom. Alexander the Great was good to them. They once asked the Sultan of the Ottoman Empire, they said, what are you doing about your Jewish problem? And he said, I don't have a Jewish problem. They said, well, you've got a lot of Jews living in your empire, including Palestine. And he said, the way to deal with the Jewish problem is give them freedom, and they'll deal with their own problem. You give them freedom, they assimilate. This is the Sultan.
Why do you think they do that? Why, when there's freedom, would they choose to assimilate? Because things aren't difficult then, and you're not being oppressed then. Is it memories of oppression or...?
It's memories of oppression, and it's also when there's oppression, then the oppressor doesn't want you, the oppressed, as part of their group. So you can't assimilate if you're not wanted. Freedom, do what you like. You are wanted. America is like that. America is freedom. America has racism, black-white. But it's all, human rights has taken a huge leap. But certainly we don't see anti-Semitism in America. There is.
But we do see racism.
We do see racism. Right. So the racism is white-black. And therefore, the blacks haven't totally integrated into the American society. They're still fighting for rights. They're still fighting against racism. We don't see that with Jews in America. What we do see is that the Jews are in the highest levels of everything. Business, politics, all cultures, learning, universities. Why? Freedom. And they do integrate. And the story that I told right in the beginning about, well, I'm living in America, you know, I can't wear a beard. I can't keep the Shabbos. That's what's happening in America.
And still, you've got the Hasidim very strong in America.
Right, good point. Hasidim have now stuck to the original belief and they against assimilation. Intermarriage is taboo. And it's a very strong movement. Very strong.
Well, they've got houses for young people all through the world.
Yes.
They are a worldwide movement.
Yes.
And some of them are lovely.
You know, in Israel, there's a million Haredi now.
They're not so lovely.
Well, there's always this thing about Judaism that if you're not religious, then we will lose our religion. So we say, well, and if this has been a cause of argument between Orthodox and Reform. Reform say, well, how can I get to shul unless I drive? And the spark in the car is not against the mitzvah of keeping the Shabbos. But Orthodox say, no, you can't drive because there's a spark in the car. And you say, well, that's ridiculous. And they say, well, if you let go of one thing, next thing you'll be letting go of another and making new rules, and next thing we won't have any Judaism anymore.
Well, I think it's a bit stupid to say you can't switch on a light because it's making a fire, and to get somebody else in to come and switch on the light, or now to have it automatically. That to me is just not feasible.
Not logical, not feasible.
Not logical, not feasible.
But the Orthodox, and let me say this. The Orthodox agree with you because the Orthodox actually carry on and practice Reform ways. If you look at any community in the world, if you look at the Orthodox community, they say we're Orthodox. But you ask, do you keep the Shabbos? Do you keep kosher? 90% of the Orthodox don't. So what are they? You can either call them hypocrites or they adopting the culture of the Reform. They're assimilating with the Reform. But you can't say that because they'll always use this argument from the leaders down. They'll say, no, if you let go of one thing, then next thing you've let go of the whole thing. And we've had this for 3,500 years or 2,000 years, and you can't let go.
I still think the culture that was years and years ago of women in a secondary position doesn't go with a modern culture, not just of the country, but of the world, that women have been fighting for rights of equality. And if you separate them, it's not equality.
Agreed.
Thank you.
And human rights is becoming stronger and stronger. We just need to have a look at recent events. One Harvey Weinstein has been indicted for rape. Why? Because there's always been this thing that there's no equality. That you go to the movie industry, and because the men are in positions of power, they take advantage of the women. That's the underlying thing. So now it's rape, and now it's no good. You happy with that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's worldwide it has to change. And, of course, there are countries where women are still in secondary positions. But, you know, in Africa, it's the women who do all the work.
Yes.
And the men used to be in the beer hall.
Well, can't we say the men went out hunting to get the food? I mean, it sounds a bit better.
Well, when I was in Zambia, that was what was happening. The women were doing all the work. And the men were working in the mines, but they spent a lot of time in the beer hall.
Well, let me support what you've just said. I think I was going to say this at the end, but I will say it now. There are two reasons why there has been Jewish survival in the face of assimilation, in the face of Jews taking on other cultures, and in the face of diminishing numbers by outright murder. In the face of that, there are two reasons. Number one is, in the 12th century, one of the greatest philosophers, writers, Maimonides, Rambam. He lived in Spain, and he fled Spain when the Mamelukes or when
Inquisition.
No, before the Inquisition. He was 12th century, so it's when the Muslims swept across North Africa and conquered all those countries, Tunisia, and Egypt, Algeria, Morocco, and then they jumped over into Spain and conquered most of Spain. And when they conquered it, there was a lot of movement, including the Rambam and his family left Spain. And I think he went to Palestine or whatever it was called. And after that, he went to Egypt. And in Egypt, he became the doctor, the physician, to the royal family. That was his work by day.
I didn't realize it was in Egypt. Egypt. I thought it was, yeah.
Faisal, I think the king's name was Faisal. And in the evening, he had his practice. He administered health treatments to the people. And at midnight, he started doing his study and writing. And he wrote the greatest laws ever. Didn't actually write the laws. He codified them. Because before he codified them, it was very difficult to follow the law. And he extracted the laws and put them into a good order, 13 volumes of good order. And he wrote A Guide for the Perplexed.
I love that title.
Oh, what a book this is.
What a lovely title.
And because of this, in my opinion, he made religion and Judaism available to the people. Before that, only the scholars knew what to do, and so you had to follow the scholars without knowing what you were doing, the rabbis. He codified it. So that's number one. The second one is the Jewish women. The Jewish women have been the antidote to assimilation. Why? They're the ones who keep the home Jewish. We say, you're Jewish if your mother was Jewish. I totally agree with that, because the mother is more Jewish than the father. The mother keeps the traditions. She keeps the Shabbat. She lights the candles, the chalot. She does all the Jewish traditions without necessarily knowing the laws and studying the Torah. She does it. And in my opinion, those are the two things, the antidotes to assimilation. I'm sure there'd be some people who disagree with me, but bring it on. We can talk about it. I'll take you back to some of the periods. 3,500 years ago, we had Egypt. Was there assimilation in Egypt? I dare say there wasn't. There might have been some, but generally there wasn't. We stayed in our own area, and then we had oppression. And we had murder. If you remember, when the Jewish population was expanding, the Pharaoh said, come, let us deal wisely with them, lest they side with our enemies, because they're too many. And what did they do? Throw all the new firstborn sons into the river. What's that? That's keeping the population down. So certainly oppression, slavery, no assimilation. Next we'll get to the destruction of the first temple. That was Nebuchadnezzar, 600 BCE. And then the people were dispersed. I do think at the time of Babylon, there was a good deal of freedom. and people assimilated. But then, some years later, a new king allowed the Jews to go back to Israel, and they did. And when they did, it was Ezra, I think, two of the prophets, and they said, well, only those who are Jewish can come. If you're married to a non-Jew, you can't come. So clearly there was assimilation. If you're married to a non-Jew, neither you nor your wife or husband nor children can come. So that's a clear indication that at the time there was assimilation. Then we get to Alexander the Great, which I've discussed. I've said about that was 350 BC. Then we get to 200 BC, which was the Seleucids and the Maccabees, which we've dealt with. And then we get to 70 AD, the time of the Roman Empire, where they destroyed the temple, and that was the second exile. And Jews were sold into slavery, and they didn't assimilate. However, when they'd been living in lands in Europe where there was freedom, they assimilated. Where there wasn't freedom, they didn't. In the 15th century, we had the Spanish Inquisition. Spanish Inquisition was terrible. Many people were killed. Many people were forced to convert. Many people converted, and I think they were called the conversos, but many people converted but still practiced Judaism, the Maranos.
For spite.
For spite, or because they were afraid to practice another religion. Mm. They were afraid. 50,000 fled to Portugal, and 7 years later, Portugal had an Inquisition, so I think they fled to Europe. Spanish Inquisition, they fled to North Africa. This is now in the 15th century. They fled to North Africa, 50,000 or more. And they lived with the Muslims for hundreds of years, happily. Many of those integrated when there was freedom. When there was oppression, they didn't. 19th and 20th century, huge immigration from Europe to where? To America. Europe, they had on and off. They had exiles, get out of my country, come back. The economy is not so good. But generally, there were people who were displaced in England, in France, in all of Europe. So they fled. They went to America. In America, a lot of assimilation. Freedom. They did what they liked. They were good leaders in all fields. They had the vote. They could own land. And so we had assimilation. That was from Europe, mainly to the USA. Now, I was going to end with the two antidotes, which we already discussed, Rambam codifying the law and women keeping the tradition, but I'm now going to end with Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill in 1920, he wrote, "Some people like the Jews, some do not, but no thoughtful man can doubt the fact that they are beyond all question the most formidable and the most remarkable race which has ever appeared in the world." Thanks for having me on the talk. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Jules, and thank you for listening. Don't forget to listen next Sunday at 10 past 10. And if you've missed this program, you can go to www.org.nz/Radio Shalom, one word. And we would like to thank our sponsor, Nature Bee.
Piacere un bel mazzo di rose e anche il rumore che fa il cielo fa, ma una birra fa gola di più in questo giorno appiccicoso di caucciù. Sono